And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, August the 25th. Last Thursday in August of 2016, 1:15 coming up on 1:16 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Scott Spears along with you tuned in. You're tuned into the Now program here on WWGH Radio. And today we're going to have a lot of fun because we are going to remember the legendary King of Rock and Roll. And we are going to remember him with somebody who knew him very well. Who is the author of a great book, which I was very pleased to receive in the last week, Taking Care of Elvis by Tish Henley Kirk, Elvis's nurse for many, many years. We're going to talk to Tish here momentarily, but before we do, let's hear just a little bit of the legendary King of Rock and Roll, the one and only Elvis Presley. And here he goes. In the county jail, the prison band was there and they began to wail. The band was jumping and the drum began to swing. You should have heard the locked out jailbird sing. Let it rock. Everybody let it rock. Everybody in the old cell block was dancing to the jailhouse rock. Spider Murphy played his inner saxophone. Little Joe was blowing on the slide trombone. Crash, boom, bang. The whole rhythm section was a purple gang. Let's rock. Everybody, let's rock. Everybody in the old cell block was dancing to the jail. Let's rock. Number 47 said to number 3, you're the cutest jailbird I ever did see. I sure would be delighted with your company. Come on and do the jail. Let's rock with me. Let's rock. Everybody. And what a classic song it was. Nobody who ever heard that will ever forget it. And I'm sure that goes the same for Tish Henley Kirk, Elvis's personal nurse. Tish, how are you?
I'm just wonderful. How are you doing today?
Doing very well. When you hear that, what does it make you think?
It makes me think it's the greatest voice that God ever put on the face of this earth.
Why was he so good?
You know, he just had a special talent. He had a special gift. I don't think it can be reproduced. It hasn't been after all these years. God just gave him a rich, rich blessing, and we were very fortunate that he shared it with the whole world.
Tish, I got the book. I love the book because one of the great things about it is there are a lot of great anecdotes in here, but the pictures are tremendous. Do you have a big record of your time with Elvis?
Yes, I do. I was very, very blessed to be a very special part of his life as his nurse and as a personal friend. I traveled with him. I took 4 weeks of my vacation every year. I did not have my first family vacation until 1978. And he found in me somebody he could trust, could confide in, as I did him. And it was a wonderful journey.
It sounds like it. And again, the book is Taking Care of Elvis, if you want to go take a look and get a copy of this. Tish, I want to talk a little bit about your life here before we get to Elvis. Tell me about your childhood. How did you become a nurse?
Well, I grew up in Northwest Tennessee, and we were very poor. I picked cotton every year. And I said a prayer one day when I picked cotton. I said, if the Lord will let me get an education, I will never come back in a cotton patch again. And a friend of my mother and our family doctor were close to us, and I knew I wanted to go into medicine, and they both had been in Memphis at St. Joseph, so that was my choice, and it was a wonderful choice. I had 50 years experience in internal medicine and cardiology, and then, as you know, I had from 1968 to the end with Elvis Presley.
9 years with Elvis Presley. Well, tell me about the first time you met Elvis.
First time I met Elvis Presley was he had bought a ranch down in Nesbitt, Mississippi, which is just a few miles from Graceland. He and Priscilla hadn't been married but a short while, and he bought 6 horses. And he had ridden the horse all day long, and he called his friend George Klein. At the time, his girlfriend was a receptionist at the medical group I was with. He's got a sore butt, and he needs to see a doctor. So Dr. George Nicopoulos agreed to go down there after he saw his patient. And a couple of weeks after that, Elvis had another medical issue, and he called, and Dr. Nick told him he was an established patient. You know, there's 12 doctors here, and that's the protocol we'll have to do. So we kept the clinic open to take care of him, and I was the one taking care of him. I was in the room with him, and he and I were just chit-chatting. But as he sat there in the chair, he was talking to me, but he was looking down at his knees. And, hey, I'm just a little country girl from Northwest Tennessee, and I just walked over to him, took him by his chin, pulled his head up. I said, Elvis, if you talk to me, you look at me. So we went ahead in the room. I had a page to go to Dr. Nicopoulos' office. I instantaneously thought, well, I've been fired. But Dr. Nicopoulos knocked on his door, and I said, you paged me, sir? And he said, yes, what did you say to Elvis? And I proceeded to tell him. He said, he likes you. So that's how it was. Just meant to be. Right place, right time, nurse, right patient.
You know, it's kind of interesting because Dr. Nicopoulos, Dr. George Nicopoulos, was on this show, I think it was back in 2009 or 2010, and sadly Dr. Nicopoulos passed away this year, back in February. What kind of guy was Dr. Nicopoulos? Nope, you're kind of going in and out on us, Tish.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said he was kind, caring, loving, gentle, very intelligent doctor, loved his patients. He and Elvis had a lot of the same characteristics. I say always, there's just not enough adjectives to describe Dr. Elvis, and I feel almost the same way about Dr. Nicopoulos. He just was a good physician. A very good physician, and a very good friend, and I miss him a lot.
Why do you think Elvis chose Dr. Nicopoulos?
I think they just kind of meshed with their personalities, and his gentleness that he had not had in the past with some physicians that he'd had, and I think that just kind of, their personalities just kind of meshed.
When Elvis Presley walks in to the office that day, and of course he's one of the biggest stars on the planet by that point in 1968, were you nervous at all?
You know, I really wasn't until it was over. But after it was over, yes, I was very nervous. I thought, you know, I've just now been in the room and in the presence of probably one of the greatest icons this world has ever been exposed to. And little old you were just now talking to him and taking care of him and drawing his blood. And, yeah, after it was over, but during the time, no, I wasn't. I had a job to do, and I did it. But, yeah, I had a meltdown after the fact.
When you look back at his life and your time with him, the 9 years with him, how do you describe him as a person?
100% Southern gentleman, who loved and adored his fans, who would never, ever believe the attention, the love, and the devotion that he is still receiving 39 years after he has left us. I have to throw in one thing. We were sitting there one night, and somebody, I do not recall, it was some actor or some singer, had died. And Elvis looked at me, and he said, Tishina, you know, after I pass on, 10 years later, they'll say, Elvis who? Well, honey, 39 years after, and we know Elvis who.
Why do you think that is?
I think it just was his God-given talent. I think it was just his exposure to the kinds of music that he would present. And him just being a true man, and taking care of his fans, and being generous to anybody that he could. I think God just put him on this earth for us to today be saying, you know, how blessed we are to be exposed to his music.
When people look back at his life, people who did not know him, I think they think of the flashy outfits, the jumpsuits, the later part of his career, and, of course, peanut butter and banana sandwiches are forever linked to him, and things like that. What would we not know about him if we had never met him?
He was very comfortable in his own skin. And, you know, other than being on the road with him, the only thing I ever saw him in was warm-up suit and nylon tricot pajamas. He was in his comfort zone, sitting in his recliner with his pajamas or his warm-up suit in.
How would you compare him with the celebrities, the musicians of today?
Oh, my gosh, that's a hard one. He just had a charisma about him, and he was a self-taught musician. God gave him the voice to use, and he surrounded himself with good people. He took care of his people. I'm talking about he took care of everybody, but the musicians that played for him, they stayed with him because he took care of them. They took care of him as well. And there was just a camaraderie with everyone.
How was it that you became his personal nurse?
Well, our personalities just kind of meshed. I lived about 25 miles from Graceland. I worked in Midtown Memphis. And when Lisa Marie would come home, Elvis knew I had two daughters. So I would work all day at the office, go home, get the girls, take them down there, let them play with Lisa till 9, take them back home. So he wanted me to move to Graceland, and we had just built a new home, and I said, you know, no, no, no. And this went on probably for about a year or 2 years. And my husband had formerly been a police officer. At the time, he was in construction building homes, and the market had just kind of crashed on that back in the early 70s. So Elvis found out from Dr. Nick, and he interviewed my husband, and he hired my husband. But we had to live on the grounds of Graceland for him to have the job. So it was a very difficult transition, moving from a new home, from your community into a mobile home, your children changing churches, changing schools, changing friends. But it was the best transition I guess I've ever made in my lifetime. It was difficult at first. It was a big adjustment. But I was so blessed to be able to be a big part of this wonderful man's life.
Why did a gentleman in his 30s when you met him and in his 40s when he left us need a personal nurse on the grounds?
Actually, he did not need a personal nurse per se. There was very little medical attention that I gave him there. We meshed with our personalities. Most of my attention to him was sitting and watching movies with him over and over again, listening to music, him singing to me, reading, me reading to him, or just going out and doing some fun things and playing to entertain him. He couldn't go out and do like anybody else did, you know, because of him being such an important person, you know. And then, too, he was always protective because he never wanted anyone to get hurt. And so many times people did not realize what they were doing. We would leave the gates, and sometimes there might be 6 or 7 carloads of fans following us at high rates of speed. And he always got very nervous about that, afraid that he would cause somebody to have a wreck and somebody get hurt. So that was really the biggest goal that I had was, I guess you'd say, entertaining the king.
It's kind of interesting because it does sound like you were more of a friend, but
absolutely.
But in the way it worked out, you were also an employee. Is that a weird dynamic?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
How did you deal with it?
Probably the only time I was actually his personal nurse is when we were on tour. And at that time, I was nurse for not only Elvis, but everybody in the whole group, which was usually about 90 people. And, you know, there was diabetics, there was high blood pressure, we had one on dialysis. And that was when my nursing skills actually came into full foe.
We talk an awful lot about Elvis's generosity. And not to get into dollars and cents here, and it wouldn't make much sense to people now because that's the 70s and things are just different financially, but what you were making as a nurse privately and what you were making working for him, was there a drastic difference? Is his generosity the truth, the things we've always heard it to be?
His generosity was unbelievable, unbelievable. It's kind of funny. I'm kind of glad you asked me that because when I moved on the grounds at Graceland, and I continued to work. In fact, I worked at that office for 50 years. But I didn't get a salary for a long, long, long time. And we were on tour one night. And when I'd go on tour, everybody, you know, everybody got a bonus. And he said, "How much am I paying you now, Tish, Sheena?" And I said, "Elvis, I don't receive a check from you." And, I mean, his little face just dropped. And he said, "You're kidding me. You mean my dad's not paying you?" And I said, "No, we've never discussed that, Elvis, no." He said, "Now, how long have you lived here?" And it had been like 2 years or something. I don't really remember. He said, "And you have never gotten a check?" He said, "We will take care of that." So when we got home, he talked to his dad, and I became an employee of Graceland at that time. But, no, it was about 2 years that I did not. And, you know, I didn't expect one. We lived there. It cost us nothing to live there. And, you know, I just thought that was my salary, so it just never was an issue.
Did you take care of other patients while you were living at Graceland?
Other patients.
Did you still work in the clinic? Did you still?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. I worked there 8 or 9 hours every day. And I was very fortunate. I'm one of these people that I'm hyper, and if I get 3 or 4 hours of sleep at night, then I'm good to go. So most of the time, Elvis is asleep all day, and I'm working all day. And by the time I get home, and, you know, sometimes I'd walk into my mobile home, which was in the backyard at Graceland. He could be sitting at my kitchen table waiting for me to get home. And that was, you know, people think, "Oh, my gosh." But that was just a normal life for us. We could be back in the back of the trailer, and he would just walk in. Of course, you know, there's no reason to lock doors there. And so most of my time then, I would be entertaining Elvis. That sounds funny, doesn't it?
Well,
entertaining Elvis?
It's interesting because do you think that's how he saw you? Do you think he saw you as a nurse? I mean, obviously he knew what you did, but did he see you as his personal nurse or just a friend?
He saw me there as just a friend. I think the only time he related as a personal nurse is when we were on tour. And I think there I had a split personality with that. I would be his personal nurse till he would go on stage, and then I would be his friend sitting out in the audience or behind stage and him entertaining me.
Were you a fan of his before you started working for him?
Oh, yes.
Did the fan appreciation increase after you got to know him?
Pardon? I couldn't hear you.
Did the fan appreciation increase once you got to know him?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You know, because I was just a young girl in high school, and all I had was a little 45 phonograph that played the little records that I would listen to and see him when he came on TV. And for the real personality, I never knew until after I moved to Graceland.
When, you know, he had so many interesting characters in his life. You mentioned one there was his father. What was his father like?
Vernon was a gentleman. Of course, Vernon didn't have much of an education. He was a little bit on the selfish side, but Vernon and I never had any issues. He sometimes would get a little bit disturbed with Elvis because Elvis was so generous. He would have a problem with that, but he's another gentleman.
One that has become lore for all of us, Colonel Parker.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the colonel, I never had much dealings with. I think he abused his authority with Elvis as far as the money went. We rarely saw the colonel. When Elvis would play in Vegas or Tahoe where there was gambling, the colonel would always be there. We would see him when we would get there, and maybe one other time, but that was about the only time we ever saw him. I have to tell you something kind of funny. We went and we were in Vegas one time, and sitting back in the dressing room, and the colonel came in. You know, he always chewed on a big old cigar, and he was talking to Elvis, and he said, pat him on his shoulder, and he said, now, son, I want you to be real careful tonight and not throw out a lot of these scarves. The price on these scarves just went up, I'll make up the figure, 26 cents a piece or something. Now, just go, don't throw out so many of them now, you know. We got to keep the cost down. So he leaves the room, and Elvis says, watch me. You just watch me. And I'll bet he threw out 200 scarves that night. So you're not going to tell Elvis what to do.
Was there anybody in his life who he did not stand up to? Was there anybody who was the boss?
Probably on the road, Joe Esposito was the boss. But, you know, and Elvis didn't, he wanted somebody else handling. He didn't like to make decisions. He didn't want to get involved with the finances. He didn't want to get involved with any of that. One time we were in Tahoe, and he probably did one of the best shows I'd ever seen him do, and we're sitting back in his suite, and I just looked at him. I said, you know, Elvis, I think I could not find one thing that was not perfect in your show tonight. I said, you know, and it was a sold-out, packed house. I said, I wonder how much money you made tonight. And he looked at me, and he said, Tishina, I don't know, and I don't give a blank blank. I did my job. My fans are happy. My people are going to get paid, and that's all that matters. And guess what? I never mentioned the dollar to that man again.
What was it like when you went on the road? What was it like with his fans? How did he see that?
It was unbelievable. I don't know how Elvis performed as long as he did. On the road was hard work because we were in a different state, a different town practically every day for 14 to 21 days on a tour schedule. You would go into a place, you'd do a show, you'd get in a limousine, they'd take you to the airport, you fly to another town, you sleep a few hours, you get up and you do it again. It was very, very hard work. But every show that we would come into and he would see all the fans out there just trying to get a glimpse of him, he just would shake his head in disbelief. He could not believe the love and admiration that the fans had for him.
Being that you and Dr. Nick were the two medical professionals that were involved in this, did your relationship grow over time?
Mine and Dr. Nicopoulos's?
Yes.
Oh, yes, yes. You know, we're working on two different levels. We're working together all day with a group of seeing different patients every 30 minutes or whatever the schedules was, with a whole different setting, medical setting. And then he and I did not work. We worked together with each other, but we were not. I'd take half a tour. He would take the other half. That way both of us would not be out of the office at the same time. And, of course, he was as close to me as a telephone, so if I had any questions or any issues, all I had to do was pick up the phone, you know, and call him. But we were very, very close, medically and personally as well.
It's very interesting because this is partly medical because of your work as a nurse. When Elvis was in the office in 1968, what would you consider his health to be?
He was in excellent health at that time. He was in real good health. He was probably at, you know, he was at, that was in the days of the leathers. So you know what he looked like in the black leathers. Very trim and slim, young, agile.
Being that you were a nurse and you're there for this very interesting 9-year period, even though you're acting as his friend, when did you start to think that the health, there might be some health issues here? He did gain some weight. Obviously, there's talk of drug abuse. When did you notice that maybe he wasn't in the greatest health anymore?
Probably in about 73, the latter part of 73 is when he just really got out of control.
What happened?
Well, my opinion, it was a combination of different things. Number one, he and Priscilla were divorcing. He had a baby girl that he adored that he didn't get to see all the time, and he felt guilty about that. He had some health issues that were disturbing to him. He became more lethargic. He ate more. It was very difficult to get him to exercise any. There was a book that was coming out that he really, really was upset about. It really did disturb him. It caused him to have great anguish. I don't think the three guys ever knew how hurtful that was to their friend. And I think it was just a combination of everything that just kind of exploded in him. And he was, to be as famous, as important as he was, he probably was the most depressed person, unhappy person, and he stayed in a deep, dark hole so much of the time that it was unbelievable.
As his health starts to decline, does your job as a nurse become more prevalent?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What changed? As far as your...
I had to spend more time with him. I had to monitor him, his medicine intake a lot closer. We had lots of other issues, too, because it seemed like that so many in the medical community, they thought that the way to get to Elvis Presley would be to get him some drugs, and I don't like using that word, to get him some drugs, and they could get tickets to shows, or they could get tickets for their family shows. And so there was so much interception of those things, and it was very, very difficult treating someone that you don't know what he has gotten from someone else before you administer anything to him. So it was a very nerve-wracking professional experience.
Was he at all open when it came to that? Did he say what he was doing?
He didn't talk about that a lot. He knew, and we talked about a spiral of self-destruct. And, you know, many times we tried to get him some help, but, you know, you've got to help yourself. Nobody else can do it for you.
As a nurse and somebody who is in the business of helping people and saving people, watching this decline of not only your patient, but your friend, what was it like?
Well, it was very depressing. However, as far as me being able to assess that there was going to be any immediate happening to him, no, I did not. I did not see that coming at this time of his life. I mean, here's a man who plays racquetball a few hours before this happened. Here's a man that I had walking 2 miles a day up and down the hills at Graceland there, you know, trying to get him in shape before the next tour with no symptoms whatsoever. I mean, he was a little bit more sluggish because he'd gotten so obese. But I was most surprised when I got the call from my husband that there was a problem at Graceland.
Did you notice anything prior to August 15th, 1977, that was, you say you didn't think that was coming, that the end was coming, but were there things, was that the peak of the drug abuse, the peak of the obeseness? Were there things like high blood pressure? Were there issues going on?
Yes.
And
he had some blood pressure issues. And he had several other medical issues. He had a major problem with his GI tract. You know, he would go days and days without having a bowel movement, and then he would purge heavily. So he had a lot of other underlying health issues, yes, sir.
For a person who, when you first met him, the reason he liked you was because you kind of told him how it was, did that work by the time 1977 came around?
To a point, yes, it did work. He knew his limits that he could push with me, and yes, it did work.
Did you ever think of quitting knowing what was going on?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Why did you stay?
Well, I felt like there was a need for it, and one of the times that I decided to quit was because we were in L.A., and I was on the tour, and this other doctor came on the scene, and he comes in with a little bag of medicine, and he's going to give it to Elvis. And so Elvis calls me back to the bedroom of the plane, and he said, I want you to meet Dr. So-and-so, and here's some medication that he wants me to try. It's a new program. I said, Elvis, if this is the case, then put me on a plane back to Memphis. I work for Dr. Nicopoulos. I don't work for Dr. da-da-da. And he apologized. The doctor left with his little bag of medicine, and he apologized. And that's just, then I thought, and I told Elvis, I said, you know, if you're going to be seeing other doctors other than Dr. Nicopoulos, and I'm going to be responsible for your care on the road, I think the other doctor needs to have somebody to be taking care of you on the road. No, 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 Dotish. No, no, no. It's not like that. It's not like that.
What? When was the last time you saw him?
The night before he died.
What was it like? Tell us about it.
As he would get down, he was down about the tour because he had gained a lot of weight. He was depressed. He wasn't real happy in his relationship at that time, and but I'd seen that before. I mean, when he would gain a lot of weight and get all lethargic, and then it was about time, you know, he'd wait till about 3 weeks before time to go on tour, and he thought we could just wave a miracle and we could lose 30 pounds and we could be back looking like he did in the 60s, and so that was not an uncommon thing. He was really lethargic trying to play racquetball that night, but I mean, he probably had 30 pounds on him more than he had before. But as far as anything to pinpoint, hey, he's got a medical issue that's going to take him away, I saw none of that.
Tell me about, and we just celebrated or commemorated 39 years last week. Tell me about August 15th, 1977, the day he died.
Other than losing my parents, my parents and my husband, it's the most horrific day of my life. I just could not believe that he was gone. It hurt so deep, and it still hurt. It was for years before I could go back to Graceland. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. But it was devastating.
Knowing that you, along with Dr. Nicopoulos, were probably the two closest people in the medical profession to him, when the word came that he had died, what did you think?
First of all, I was in disbelief. I just could not believe it. I just could not believe it. I was at work at the medical group when my husband called me, and driving home, I actually thought it was probably he just called me and he said, babe, you need to get home. There's a problem at Graceland. I instantly thought it was Vernon, because Vernon had, that was his dad. You know, he had heart issues. And so all the way driving home, that's what I thought I was going to find. I was going to find something that happened to Vernon. So then when I get home, and in fact, Vernon was the one that actually broke the news to me. I guess I was in a shock for a little while, because I just could not believe it. You know, you just, in such disbelief that you just can't accept the reality of the fact that he's gone.
Not that there is any blame here, but because you were taking care of him, did you ever blame yourself?
I blamed myself a few times, not at this time, but I blamed myself that I thought, you know, maybe I should have pushed him harder. Maybe we should have pushed him harder for some more therapy. But as far as anything that I personally did or gave to him, no.
On the day he died, being in the medical profession, what would you have diagnosed him with? What were his problems?
I would have diagnosed him with a complete cardiac shutdown.
Do you think, a young man, do you think there would have been any way to save his life?
You know, I've pondered over and pondered over and pondered over with that. Had there been medical professional people present at the time of the onset, there is a possibility that he could have been, some CPR could have been done. But with the report of the autopsy and everything, I think that probably maybe should somebody been there, could have done some immediate CPR, he could have been given a little bit more time. However, I think it was, death was imminent for him.
We know he was your friend and you worked with him and you remain friends, but did you ever place any blame on Dr. Nicopoulos? A lot of people did.
No, I didn't. Excuse me.
Yeah, no, I mean, a lot of people did place it on him.
Right. But Dr. Nicopoulos, if everyone, if the fans in the world knew how many times Dr. Nicopoulos saved Elvis Presley's life, the years, that gave him that many more years for him to entertain the world. Dr. Nicopoulos had a very, very difficult job in being his physician, and he did a good job with being his physician.
I do, again, we're talking with Tish Henley Kirk. Very interesting conversation. Taking Care of Elvis, Elvis Presley's personal nurse, Taking Care of Elvis is the book. You'll want to get a copy of this. But I do want to go back. As I said, we did, Dr. Nick did not do a whole lot of in-depth interviews, but he did do one with us. I believe it was 2010. I asked Dr. Nick in that interview if he felt culpable in any way for Elvis's death, and let's take a listen to that. Here we go. Dr. Nicopoulos, back on this program, 2010, I believe.
Being his doctor, do you, or had at any time, have you ever felt responsible at all for the death of Elvis Presley?
No. I think I spend most of my time, I did years of research before I went into medicine, and Elvis was a research project of mine. And we kept trying to find ways to, for him to lose weight and to do this and do that. And we were constantly changing things because of the way I went at it. Most of the other doctors that were taking care of him would, Elvis would ask for something and they would give it to him. I mean, a lot of times I used placebos instead of medicine to see if it would work. And a lot of times it worked and a lot of times it didn't work. And so that I would have to give him something in addition to a placebo. But that was the reason I wanted to attend the autopsy, to be sure that nothing I had done I left out or had something I'd missed. And the only thing I missed was that his colon was much more the problem than we thought it was.
Do you blame your colleagues in the medical profession who were treating him for his passing?
Well, yes and no. I think if we could have done the surgery in 75, which was not an acceptable practice, it was still experimental, I think if we had done that at that time, then he would still be here.
Dr. George Nicopoulos on this show back in 2010. Tish, what do you make of that?
Dr. Nicopoulos was right on spot with that. I think he said it very well. And, you know, people don't understand. They always go back to the quality of the quantity of medications that was given the last few days before Elvis died. However, you've got, as I said earlier, you've got 90 people that you're responsible for their care. Lots of those medications that were prescribed were not all for Elvis Presley. And I think that's where Dr. Nick got a real bad rap right on the end, that there were so many number-wise of controlled substance drugs that were written in Elvis's name, but it was for the whole entourage, not just for Elvis.
In that interview, we just heard that clip, Dr. Nicopoulos, in his own words, he said he felt that Elvis could have lived if some things had been done differently. Do you feel that way?
Yes, I do. And you know, we can look at these. We can look at the autopsy report now, and the condition his body was in. And this day and time, there are things that yes, absolutely could be done. But when we go back to that period of time, these things were all experimental. I mean, he had what's called a megacolon. His colon was okay. I'm going to compare it to a snake. I'm going to compare it to a garden snake and a boa constrictor. His colon was about 50 times larger than a normal colon. Therefore, he didn't have the what's called peristalsis to work to get the feces out of there. Had he had a colectomy, removed most of that colon, which they do now, then yes, I think so. I think he would have had several more years of quality life.
When somebody dies so young, they try to blame a lot of people, as we talked about, and I talked about it with Dr. Nick. They tried to blame him. A lot of people blame the drugs themselves. Is there anybody to blame for Elvis Presley's death except Elvis Presley?
Elvis Presley.
He's to blame.
Elvis Presley. He's to blame.
Is there any anger over that your friend took himself out of the game so early?
Yes, it is. Not as much now as it was in the very beginning, but yes, I was very angry. I was very angry.
What was, and like I say, this is just a conversation, but what was his worst? We talked about his great qualities, and we know those. What was his worst quality? What led to the death so young? That he's not here, and he theoretically could be, he could still be alive today, and he's not. What was his worst quality?
His worst quality was more of anything is better. Which it's not. If you've got a headache and you take an aspirin, if you take six, it'll get your headache to go away quicker. If you've gotten obese, and if you just quit eating and you eat nothing but yogurt, you can lose all that weight you gained in 15 pounds. But more, his thing was more is better. More is not always better.
So, we mentioned it earlier on, and it's just kind of an interesting way to... We've got about 3 minutes left. So much is made of the peanut butter and banana sandwiches. Was that his food? Did he eat a lot of that, or is that just myth?
No. It's a myth. He liked the peanut butter and banana sandwich with lots of butter and the bread toasted. It had to be built a certain way. But for that to be something he would eat weekly, no. Now, he was one of the people that he would get on... eating hamburger steak, peas, mashed potatoes, and he could eat it for 10 days in a row. Nah, never veer. But no, not with the peanut butter, and he liked it, but maybe once a month.
If he were here today, what do you believe an Elvis Presley would be doing around the 80-year-old mark?
I think he would be doing just like Mr. Bennett. I think he would be out there singing and entertaining his fans.
This is a strange question to ask, and I hope you understand how I'm going to ask it, because I don't mean it in a bad way. But did his dying early cement his legacy, that Elvis is today as young as he was in 1977? Would it have been bad to see an 80-year-old Elvis?
Not understand. I don't understand the question.
Well, we all grow older, and Elvis
right.
was a figure who was very virile to people, loved by women, good-looking guy, gentleman. As time passes, that just doesn't work so much for people anymore as they get older. Would it have hurt his legacy to be 80 years old and still outperforming?
Absolutely not. As long as God let him have his voice, he could have sat up there in a wheelchair and entertained just as easily as he could up there in 68 in a leather suit or in the 70s in his jumpsuit. As long as God left his voice with him, no doubt about it, he would still up there giving it his all.
Tish, this has been a very interesting conversation, and I do want to let people know again, the book is Taking Care of Elvis by Tish Henley Kirk. Where can people get this book, Tish?
They can get it on Amazon USA and Amazon Canada.
And that's where you'll want to do it. A lot of great pictures. If you want to see pictures of the King of Rock and Roll and a woman who knew him very well, you will want to check this out. Tish, thank you so much for coming on today.
All right. Thank you, Scott, and you have a blessed day.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye. Tish Henley Kirk, the nurse of Elvis Presley. A lot of fun. Hey, we're done for today. We're coming back tomorrow, though. Kick off the morning with the Ed McCant Show, Marion 2020 at 9 a.m. Swap Shop Sean Kraft at 10 a.m. Wittenberg's Door, Brett Cornelius, Lee Hall, and Sean Kraft at 11 a.m. Exchange Club at 12, and the Faye Bank Charlie Evers Show from 1 to 3. Make it a great day, but for this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
And Madge, we got the first little portal.